laid back.
With my mind on my money.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Stuffy here. Welcome to the Gen and Juice, episode 10, week 8, part 2. With me, as always, is Colin Wilson. What's going on your end, Colin?
I'm sitting here living in the apocalypse. My screen is lighting up because somebody walked into Caesars and knocked Fresno from a 7.5 down to a 7. Who are you on Wednesday night walking into Caesars, which I don't even think has an app, and laying down enough money to take that hook away from Fresno State?
The degenerate national champions, man. All Fresno does is cover. Someone listened to the podcast today and was like, I'm riding the train.
Yep. That's a horrible book, by the way. I don't like that book at all. Just the way it's shaped and the poker room and the TV setting. I was never a fan of Caesars.
Yeah, I used to get be able to sit in the center in those seats. You know, mm-hmm. Todd would reserve me a table during like March Madness when they were hard to get. And then I would just sit in those tables, and then you'd have the masses around you behind the ropes.
Right.
And I liked sitting there then. Other than that, no. I mean, it's a terrible book.
It's not like the Bellagio, because the Bellagio had a, you know, the sports book. You didn't have a bunch of, you know, peasants behind you with no ticket kind of hanging out and looking over your shoulder. And like, if you play poker, you could stare at all the TVs and the sports book from the Bellagio. So like 10 years ago, I thought Bellagio was the bomb.
Yeah, no, I liked having all the sheep back there because they're usually rooting against the side that I am. So I get joy out of seeing all them just walk away sad. Watching the baseball game right now, it is in the ninth inning. Crazy call. Joe Maddon just got thrown out. I believe their Dodgers have a pitching change, bottom eight. I'm curious to see what the Cubs do in the ninth. They're going to let Davis go. They have to. But he mm-hmm. threw 35 pitches last inning, which means even if they win this game, he's not available tomorrow. They play tomorrow, and the Cubs bullpen is a disaster right now. They're in trouble even if they win this game. But, yeah, I'm on a baseball heater. I'm so depressed that this is going to stop. Everything is just working right now. I don't know. I bet the Astros for the series at the beginning of the series, and then I took the Yankees after game two, and then I hit all three games in New York and the totals, and then now the Yankees. I'll play Astros game six. Hopefully they win that, and then the Yankees can win in seven. I'm just free-rolling the shit out of that series. But yeah, I've been lucky with a few totals. Things are just, you know, when you run well, it feels nice. But, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was in the NBA. We'll get our minute of the NBA in. I saw mm-hmm. today that Bobby Portis was suspended for the Bulls. The Bulls roster is horrifying, by the way. I was looking at their roster today, but he apparently like shattered Mirotic's face.
Right.
Do you have any Bobby Portis stories or what he was like at Arkansas? Yeah.
Bobby Portis is as country could be. Like he's from Little Rock. He's from a different high school than say Darren McFadden and Joe Johnson came out of. And they would say, oh, he's the next Joe Johnson. Bobby Portis looks like he's had 15 cups of coffee or he's had too much meth, as to where Joe Johnson looks like he's always asleep. So I never compared the two players, but Portis is as country as backwoods as could be. And I'm not surprised that he knocked the shit out of anybody challenging him because he's just got that look, that crazy eye look about him. So I'm not shocked at all. The question is, I've read one report where it was just a flat out, you know, hit with a, you know, weapon or anything like that. But then I read another story where maybe he actually used something with his swing.
I mean, Bobby Portis is 6'11" NBA player. I would consider his fist a weapon.
You know, he was 6'11". He was 6'11" when he was 15 years old. So,
wow. Yeah, I don't know if he had anything happen like that at Arkansas or anything.
We save that for Patrick Beverley. Patrick Beverley was the one beating everybody up in the locker room when he was at Arkansas.
Really?
Yeah.
I can actually see that. He's got a little street in him. He's a really feisty player. I love watching him play. Who's your favorite hog in not from the 90s since like 2000?
I can't go with Corliss. And I guess I can't go with Todd Day because that would be the 90s. I guess I can go Joe Johnson, though. That was 2000, though, right? It's kind of after 2000. Maybe I can go Pat Bradley. He was raining threes in the year 2000. If I went really old school, Oliver Miller started in 1989. So that was before the 90s.
Yeah, how about for us that are, you know, the 30 and under crowd? But since 2005, have you like fell in love with anyone from Arkansas's team since then? Like, did you love Portis?
I loved Portis. We were supposed to get him, and he committed to Arkansas before his senior year. So, I mean, that was a must have because you got to keep your in-state talent. But I mean, since then it's just been a hodgepodge, and you know, last year was the first time we've had a run in years. I mean, we had one of the longest stints of going to the tournament, like 14 years in a row before the 97 team killed that. And it's been rough ever since then. And we've had players leave. We've had some star players leave. We haven't been able to lock down recruits that, in the past, like an Al Jefferson was committed to us. He went to the NBA. Andre Iguodala was committed to us. He left for Arizona. So, I mean, it's been a real big disappointment the last 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm disappointed you didn't say one name that I thought you were going to say, because we didn't talk about this beforehand. But, you know, it's hard to love a big man in college. It's a guards game. And someone that could fill it up back in, like, 2008, 2009, Rodney Clark.
Rodney Clark, yeah, from Oklahoma, Verdigris, Oklahoma. Three-point shooter, went to Butler. The problem is he played the same time as my hometown Fayetteville High School favorite, Ronnie Brewer. So Ronnie Brewer was probably my all-time favorite, not in the 90s.
Okay, there you go. It's a good answer. And I loved that. If I had to go 90s, everyone loved Chorus, but I was a big Scotty Thurman guy.
And nobody took a charge like Corey Beck. I've never seen anybody in the history of taking charges.
Fair enough. Well, let's get our other. We got Arkansas basketball out of the way. Let's quickly get this. It's actually a game that other people want to hear about this week since they're playing a top 25 team. Your Hogs are catching 15.5 at home in Fayetteville against Auburn. Do they have any shot here? And are you looking to back them or fade them?
They have a shot at covering the number of 15. They have a shot of winning. I don't think so. Austin Allen's already been ruled out. I mean, Cole Kelly is going to be running the quarterback position, so he's bigger than the left tackle. They're going to be able to move the chains, but they're one of the worst in the country in explosive plays. And I think Auburn's kind of on the – I don't think they're going to be fully recovered from that LSU loss. I don't expect a great effort from them. But as far as covering the 15, hey, Arkansas covered the closing number against Bama. You know, kind of ridiculous. They needed some help there at the end. But hey,
some help. Two fourth down conversions and three personal fouls. Jesus. And they missed another extra point.
We got something positive, a little positive here. So I think it's a stepping stone. I think we can cover the 15 this weekend.
Yeah, it's a matter of, I don't know, the psychological state of Auburn. I would lean towards they'll be a little deflated and flat. But I saw some things from that kid Kelly. I mean, he's fearless. I'll give him that. Yeah, he's huge and he's fearless. He doesn't have any pocket presence. I mean, he would get pressure. Granted, he's playing Alabama, and he would just run straight back. But he wasn't afraid of the moment.
I was watching the game. I was watching the Bama game with my grandmother, and in her Arkansas slang, she said he just looks like a big dumb animal. Just takes it. He doesn't care how much he gets hit, right? He's just a battering ram. He's a punching bag. He'll take it and do an A-gap dive. He doesn't care.
Yeah, huge football guy. You can tell he just loves football. But, yeah, my Ravens, they're at the Vikings. They're in a buy low, sell high spot. But I don't know. I lean them here. Their offense is so bad, though, so bad. And no receivers, the interior. Ronnie Stanley's actually been the best offensive lineman from a pass protection standpoint in the NFL this year. Their tackles have actually played well, but up the middle, they're struggling a little bit, but they just don't have playmakers. I mean, Flacco in the past has whenever he's had a good year, he's always had a Bolden, a Steve Smith to rely on. And, you know, Harriman's not that guy. We can never, Ozzie's great drafter, never can draft receivers. You know, we had a kid from Florida back in the day. Receivers never pan out. And, we really missed Woodhead out of the backfield. He was probably going to be the leading receiver. So, I don't know. I'll look there. I do love the under in that game. I think it's a defensive battle.
Yeah, there's a massive yards per play differential between the Vikings and the Ravens, too. So if it were just a mathematical base alone, the Ravens' YPP is kind of eye-opening.
Yep, I would agree. So, yeah, no real strong feel there. Let's get into part two of the Gin and Juice podcast. We follow the same format. The first segment that we do is look ahead or look away. We'll look at the biggest look ahead spots. Segment two, we do switch it up from time to time. Usually it's FCS or no, if there's some FCS or FBS matchups, which I especially like. But this week, again, there are no FCS versus FBS games. So we'll look at letdowns, letdown spots. There was a number of huge upsets. So we'll get into who those teams, the teams that had the big upsets, who they play this week, and if we expect a letdown or not. Then we'll go through the top 25, some of the marquee games. Then this upcoming weekend, get some of Colin's thoughts. I'll sprinkle in little, some little tidbits here and there. And then we'll finish with a three and out. I have two questions for Colin on first and second down. And then on third down, we'll do our weekly Moneyline underdog parlay, and then we'll sign off here. So let's get into the look ahead segment. The first one I have here is Iowa State. So, you know, this is almost a double look ahead. I don't necessarily think that Iowa State would have a look ahead here, but wanted to talk about this game. So Iowa State's catching 7 at Texas Tech, right? So Iowa State beat Texas Tech, by the way, last year, 66-10. So Texas Tech does have, you know, some pretty big revenge, but Iowa State has TCU at home on deck next week, and Texas Tech, who just gave away that game against West Virginia, they are actually at Oklahoma and Norman next week. Is there any look-ahead spot here, or do you favor any team from a situational perspective?
I favor Iowa State in this spot. First off, I think the line should be 3 and not 7, so I think there's value on Iowa State. If they're smart and they're looking ahead at their schedule, Iowa State only plays in Ames twice for the rest of the year, and they're sitting at 4-2. So if they want to make a bowl game, they've only got games. The winnable games is this one, West Virginia, Baylor. I mean, they don't have many shots to get to 6 wins here. As to where Texas Tech has plenty of home games left. They've kind of got the same group, the same schedule, and they got OU on deck. I don't think Iowa State is the kind of team that looks ahead, especially with Matt Campbell, you know, coming over as head coach last year. I think he's really got them focused, and getting 6 wins is important. And plus, with only 2 home games left, they don't have many chances.
Playing it or not, or are you staying away here?
It's a tweener. We'll see.
Okay. Next one I have here is Duke. They're laying 8 at home against Pitt. Pitt actually beat Duke last year 56-14, I believe. So you do have some revenge for Duke. But Duke, this is a classic sandwich spot. And I know you hate Pitt, so you're probably not going to recommend Pitt. But Duke just played Florida State, played them close, and they're 0-20 now. In their program history against Florida State. They lost by 7. The game was tied late. And then they have Pitt coming in. You know, there's another early game. The Iowa State is an early kick, too. This Duke game's an early kick, and they're at Va Tech next week. Any way in the world you can recommend backing Pitt here or no?
No, I wouldn't back either team. You're right, though. It is a big sandwich spot. Duke is -8. Should be -5 by my power ratings. I like the under in this spot because I think you're right. I think Duke's just in a really bad spot. Pitt's covered 1 game this year. I had to read that 3 times. Pitt's covered 1 game this year, so there's no way I would be on their side, especially Max Brown, quarterback gone a couple weeks ago now. So I would take the under here.
Yeah, and the 1 game they did cover, I was on them, and they really shouldn't have against Syracuse, catching 3.5. So, yeah, they've been really bad. And they gave away. They probably should have covered last week when NC State broke a run running out the clock. Next spot I have here is Boston College. So I believe their quarterback, Anthony Brown, is questionable this week. They're coming off a straight up win. You know, this almost falls into the letdown category as well. But they're coming off a straight up win at Ville. Now they're traveling to Virginia, who's been surprising this year. But does BC really get up for this game after winning at Louisville, second consecutive road game with Florida State on deck? Do you see anything here?
Yeah, I see the under in this game too. Virginia, the Wahoos, they're in the top 20 in defensive efficiency and limiting explosive plays. And Boston College isn't the most dynamic team in the world, especially if they're missing their quarterback. So you can see the total opened up around 49. It's down at 46.5 at some books. So I can only suggest the under in this game.
Yeah, that's another early kick. So the first 3 games that we mentioned are all early kicks. Yeah, I would look that way as well. Keep an eye on the injury report there. But, yeah, Virginia's been one of the most surprising teams in the country. Last spot I had here in the look-ahead segment is Georgia Tech. So they're coming off. They're laying 6 at home against Wake Forest. I think Wake's coming off a bye. Georgia Tech coming off that devastating loss against Miami, that last-second loss in a game they really deserved to win. They're still undefeated against the spread, by the way. Here's the thing. They go home to play Wake. It's not like they have a great home field advantage. Next week, they're at Clemson. This has sandwich written all over it. What do you see here?
Yeah, same thing, except the line, I wanted to wait for a 7 on Wake Forest. I see it as I'm looking at the screen right now. It's gone from a 6.5 down to 6. So if you want to jump on Wake, I think you should. You're, like you said, they're off of a bye week. They come in to play Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech is one of the worst teams in the country as far as explosion plays goes. And Wake Forest defensively has been very impressive. They're 19th in efficiency and 28th in limiting explosive plays. So I don't expect Georgia Tech. I expect them to be flat. I don't think they're going to be able to get anything going. And Wake's going to be plenty rested for this. So I can already see the 6.5s disappearing. So if you're listening to this, get in on it.
Yeah, I was going to wait for the 7 as well. And as I'm speaking, Wade Davis just got the save. 50-pitch, 2-inning save of I think maybe – Joe Maddon getting thrown out was a blessing in disguise. He probably would have brought in Lackey. But imagine if the Cubs actually used Davis the other night. They might, you know, be a little more in the series. But good for Wade Davis. He's just a one of the best postseason relief pitchers of all time with his numbers.
Yes, sir.
You know that
yes,
well.
Sir. Yes, I do.
Moving into the next segment, which is usually the FCS or no, we'll get into some of the letdowns. So here's a game where there's actually a look ahead in the first one that I'm going to go through. There's a look ahead and a letdown. So last week, one of the biggest upsets of the weekend was Arizona State beating Washington outright as 17-point underdogs. They travel to Utah this week. They're catching 9.5, I believe, at Utah. After that enormous Washington win next week, they have USC at home. You know, it's tough to, you know, be looking ahead or, you know, with a game against Utah this week, but the letdown factor, what do you see here?
Man, if they happen to win this Utah game, Arizona State, that sets up a monster one loss matchup against USC and Arizona State in the South. Anyways, I think Utah does win this though. I'm going to probably be on Utah in some way or fashion. They're 5-0-1 against the spread against the number this year. And Arizona State's, they've only covered two of their last eight games on the road. And you could just tell with some of their efficiency numbers that they're just different on the road than they are at home. So I'm not sure what's going on with Todd Graham's squad there. I think the number is a little bit high. And Utah definitely has the better defense, especially with efficiency. So I'm looking to play Utah here, but I would like to see the number come down a little bit. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I wouldn't want to be on the side of an Arizona State team that just beat Washington.
Fair enough. Second spot here. Now, this is a game I believe we disagree on.
Yep.
This is Syracuse at Miami. Line has been in the dead range. I think it opened at 14.5. Now it's at 16.5. The angle here on the surface is that Syracuse just beat Clemson, you know, probably their biggest win in, you know, quite some time. And, you know, they were a 21-24 point underdog. It is worth noting they have an extra day of prep. But, on the surface, you would think that they're going to have a letdown here when they go to Miami. Miami's been really lucky. Here's the thing. Shout out to at GCN Moo, who looked this up. We looked up since 1980, teams that are catching 10 or more points, teams that have beat a top 10 team as 10-plus point underdogs. The next week, I'll pull up their against the spread stats. They'll actually shock you. After they beat an unbeaten team in the top 10, the next week they're 184 and 168-6 against the spread. I would have expected that to be flipped, but you look at that one of two ways. You could either say that those teams are, you're overvaluing the letdown factor, or you know, teams that are catching 10 plus that do beat a top 10 team, an unbeaten team, you know, they're probably not as prone to a letdown as, you know, a Virginia Tech catching 7 against Clemson, because, you know, they're probably going to take more confidence from it. And that confidence is going to maybe outweigh some of the letdown. I don't know, just a random hypothesis. But I think Miami's a fraud. Syracuse has been unlucky in some of their losses with turnovers. They have this extra day. I like Syracuse, anything over two touchdowns. And so I take it that you disagree.
Yeah, I disagree this week. I think Cuse is going to be on a big hangover, and you know, it's going to be 90 degree temperatures down there in Miami, which is quite a change for these kids that are up there, you know, close to Lake Ontario. Miami's defense, I think they can shut them down. They're familiar enough with what Cuse is going to try to do. And I think they're just going to be physical with them. And I think the physical fatigue and the emotional fatigue, I think that's what gets Miami home. I don't think it's a complete blowout from the beginning, but I just think that the letdown comes in the second half and Miami's going to be able to cover.
Okay, we might be going to war again, just like LSU Auburn, but we'll see where that line ends up. Another letdown spot that I have here is Cal's catching 3 I believe now. I think we both got this. We're on the same side here. Early in the week, we both took Cal as a pick. We both took Arizona. Cal's plus right. +3. We both took Arizona at a pick. Cal, after that Wazoo win, is at home. They're hosting Arizona. You think Dick Rod keeps the covering going?
So I did some deep dive studying tonight, and I actually think I'm going to buy off of Arizona. And I think that it's crazy. I mean, everything that I could read on the surface from above on this game said that Arizona should be able to just run all day. And then I got down deep into the stats, and I noticed that Cal's rushing ISO PPP plus. Now, what that means to nerds, I saw that on Twitter today, nerds like myself, is that Cal's rushing defense, as far as limiting explosive plays, they're 15th in the nation, which means almost nobody's busted anything on the ground against them. And when you look at their passing S&P defense, it's 24th. So Cal's actually secretly has the things that can stop Khalil Tate. And the rushing ISO PPP plus for the defense, I didn't know that the Bears were limiting explosive plays on the ground that well. So for that reason, there may be a buy-off for me. I may be hopping on Cal, just to buy off of what I got on Zona, which I have a good little window here right now. But I may turn around and hit Cal for more and play the +3 because it looks like they may be able to keep Khalil Tate in check.
Well, one thing to note, they do have an extra day of prep, but, I mean, they were celebrating like they just won the Pac-12 championship. They beat Washington State. Great. I mean, they were acting like they won the Pac-12. So you're not worried about a letdown here at all?
It's been 8 days, though, right? Are you still partying when you smoke that much weed, like in an 8-day span? Don't you forget?
Yeah, it's a fair point in Berkeley, but it screams flat spot to me. If I can catch over 3 and feel that strongly about it, I'll try and come back for some. Game that I had in the letdown spot is Boise, Wyoming. So I had to put this game in here because, you know, it's not the biggest letdown in the world. Boise beat San Diego State. They were catching 6, but you know, it was a big game. San Diego State was undefeated and ranked. The reason I put this game in here, these are you're probably going to be wrong in this game, I'm assuming. these are your teams. You flip from a Wyoming fan to a Boise fan. Wyoming beat Boise last year, 30-28. Yep. Boise's laying 14 here. Tell me which side you like so I can bet the other.
So I'm taking Boise. So obviously you got to get your Wyoming jersey on, get your Cowboys jersey on. So I was digging into the stats tonight on Josh Allen. I said, what the hell's going on here? This guy was supposed to be like one of the top NFL quarterbacks drafted coming up. Turns out Wyoming's passing S&P rating is 124th out of 130 teams. That's shocking to me. 124th for Josh Allen. I've talked on multiple podcasts about how terrible Wyoming's defense is, but their passing S&P is horrid. So there's no way I'll have any money on Wyoming in this game.
Yeah, I mean, has anyone's draft stock plummeted as much as Josh Allen's? I mean, he would have been better off getting hurt.
No more game day exposés on him, you know, when I wake up and start drinking my Bloody Marys.
Yeah, it's been horrendous. It started with that first week against Iowa. It should have been a red flag. And the reason for that is, you know, Iowa lost a lot in the secondary. I thought they were going to be able to throw the ball, and they couldn't throw it at all. That should have really been a red flag. But yeah, they've really struggled. I probably can't take Wyoming here. Not sure I want to. I don't see a ton of value in the number on the surface. What do you actually have this at?
I've got Wyoming coming in at 16. I got this Boise minus 16. So, you know, a little bit higher than what the number is out there right now.
Okay, fair enough. Now let's get into the third segment of the Degen and Juice Part 2 podcast, which we do each week. Part 2 comes out on Thursday. If you missed the Part 1, that usually comes out on Tuesdays each week, and we kind of recap the previous weekend and look into the weekday games. If you're looking for some Thursday and Friday action, make sure you give it a listen on the Sports Action app. But for the third segment, we'll run down the marquee games of the top 25. I'll point out 3 games in particular. Oak State laying 7 at Texas. Penn State, one of the marquee games, primetime games, Penn State minus 9.5-ish at home against Michigan, and West Virginia minus 8.5 at Baylor. Those three games, which all feature at least one top 25 team, they'll be covered in the CW9. Colin will have an angle in each of those games, so make sure you keep an eye out for that. Hopefully we can repeat another 7-2 weekend. So let's get into some of the other top 25 games coming up on Saturday. Start with Alabama, number one team in the country. They're laying 34.5 against Tennessee. I don't know who's running the bet Tennessee here. I can't even imagine how few tickets are on the Vols. Minus 34.5. Does Bama name it? Do you have to stay away? Is Saban pissed? What's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of factors going on here, none of which have to do with the point spread. I have the power rating says it should be 31. The number's 34. I've got Tennessee players in the locker room that have checked out. I've got a coach that knows his name's about to be called anytime with Butch Jones. Bama's heading into a bye. So the question is how much do they want to put it up on them, right? Do they want to spend the second half? I mean, Damian Harris is hurt. I mean, the key to them winning the national championship is that stable of running backs. And, you know, they start taking some dings and dents, especially their linebacking core here in this, you know, you should say the first half of the season before they hit the bye. I'm not sure Bama's really going to have their foot on the pedal in the second half here, but there's no way I'd lay money on Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, one of the angles that I was thinking of here is, you know, Saban always likes to pick on something. And, you know, there were some times he could have picked on, you know, some penalties last week against Arkansas, but especially the defense. And, you know, the defense letting Texas A&M back in the game, you know, the defense against Colorado State. And I think that I agree with you, they're not going to keep their foot on their gas, but I don't see the Vols scoring. I think they shut them out. I might look at the under here, under 50.5.
It's funny, if Tennessee covers, then he's got 2 weeks to prepare for LSU and just harp on these kids day after day about how Tennessee kept it so close and how terrible they are.
Yeah, I see it. I don't see this as a, I mean, it's a good point. He probably would like that. I see this as like 35-0, right around the number. I mean, I can't see Tennessee scoring much. And I think Bama might be pissed they gave up that touchdown late, that backdoor ridiculous touchdown to Arkansas, depending on what number you got. Okay, how about let's go with two of the undefeated teams from non-Power 5 conferences that are in the top 25. They're both road favorites, you know, and they're both under two touchdown favorites in potentially tricky spots. Curious to see if you think either UCF, who's, you know, laying about 7.5, they're just over a touchdown at Navy, interesting, or USF, who is laying about 11.5-12 at Tulane. An interesting tidbit that I'll throw in is that Navy has won 17 straight at home, including last October. They beat then, this is pretty funny to think about how much different this team is now, the number six team in the country, Houston, at home, 44-40. If Navy has any shot in this game, it's going to hit 100 points, I would assume. But who's in more danger here of a straight-up upset? Is it too late? Is it USF or UCF?
I think USF is in more danger of losing straight up. I think they're both in danger of not covering. I got some good notes on both these. So I'm having a hard time taking Navy because I keep looking at their defensive and offensive explosive plays. So defensively, they're 115th in the country, which is really bad against UCF, which is just blowing everybody out of the water. And then offensively, they can't explode as well as they have been able to in the past. So if they happen to get down by 14 to UCF, they may have a problem getting back into the game real quick. So where Navy excels is that they're eighth in the country in offensive efficiency, which means that they control the clock, they move the chains, and they try not to make any mistakes. They're number one in the country, Navy is, in time of possession, which is huge for them in this game against UCF. It's you know, playing keep away. Navy, though, my problem with backing Navy, where I think this might be a sit back and play live or something like that, is that Navy's 106th in the nation in turnover margin. So the ball hasn't bounced their way. They haven't been the first to recover fumbles or make, you know, they have a bad havoc rate on defense as far as causing turnovers. So they need to be able to protect the ball and control the clock. I think they can control the clock. I'm not so sure that some sort of turnover, some crazy turnover that happens in the second half isn't the reason that they don't win/cover. Tulane, on the other hand, this is going to be in the CW9. And just to, you know, play spoiler alert here, USF has not played one team in the top 100 in the S&P Plus top 100. This is their first time to play a team. They're going to go play at Tulane, who specializes with really Willie Fritz's, you know, option. And it, you know, it's a specialized offense that USF might not be prepared and ready for. And when I started diving real deep into the numbers, Tulane's rushing ISO PPP, which is their explosiveness on the ground, is 17th in the nation on offense, as to where South Florida, with this bum schedule, they're 113th in the nation in giving up ground plays, explosive plays on the ground. So I think Tulane is going to be able to run it all day, control the clock all day. They're going to be able to hit any gap they want. And I don't think USF's going to be able to do anything about it. I think Tulane is primed to be a huge dog win this weekend.
Yeah, I actually like both. I actually like Tulane better. Navy, there's blowout risk there. I would lean, I think that team's going to shatter, to be honest. I would be, the only thing I'm afraid of with Tulane is South Florida. They've done a lot on the road this year. They had a game at Connecticut canceled. They won at East Carolina, and they won at San Jose State. So with that road resume, I mean, you got to be scared if you're Tulane. Yeah, I mean, I think South Florida is obviously overvalued here. They beat Cincinnati. This is their last four wins. They're just on their season. They beat San Jose State, Stony Brook, Connecticut, Illinois, Temple, East Carolina, and Cincy off a bye. I mean, that's a joke. This is the first team with a pulse. I mean, because Illinois obviously lost theirs that they're playing this year.
And all those teams you just named, right, how bad they are. South Florida still has one of the worst explosive plays defense on the ground in the nation. And listen to that, the Stony Brook. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it's one of the worst schedules I've ever seen. And they had their Connecticut game. That probably would have been their hardest game so far today. They had that canceled. So let's move on. Those will be, yeah. So you said USF Tulane will be in the CW9?
Absolutely.
Okay. Sounds good. Virginia Tech, I don't think there's much here, but curious to see if your numbers disagree. They're laying 21, three touchdowns at home against UNC. Vautech off a bye. UNC just gets trucked every weekend. See anything here at all?
I noticed, I've been keeping tabs on this when with Fedora and when Chizik was there, about how many times UNC loses the second half. They've won in the second half once this year. So for me, you know, this is if you're going to play UNC, play in the first half. If you're going to play Virginia Tech, play in the second half.
Good tidbit there. Michigan State minus 6.5 at home against Indiana. Michigan State, Antonio might have them refocused after letting Minnesota back in that game. Indiana might be a little deflated after that overtime loss to Michigan. Intriguing aspect here. Indiana actually upset Michigan State last year in Bloomington in overtime. And overtime actually went right for the Hoosiers, 24-21. So Michigan State does have some revenge here. No look ahead for Michigan State either. I'd lean Sparty, especially if you can get it under 7. Do you agree?
Yeah, I wouldn't do anything over 7 because points will be at a premium here. Both these teams excel in defensive efficiency, and Sparty limits explosive plays. So definitely I would want it under 7, and I'm looking at under for the game.
Like that as well. Oklahoma minus 13.5 at Kansas State. Oklahoma beat Kansas State by 3 touchdowns last year. I backed Kansas State last week against TCU. That offense was horrific. I don't really want to get involved with them, even if it's in Manhattan again. Even if they're catching close to 2 touchdowns, I don't think that they can keep up. What do you think here?
Yeah, I've got a notification on my phone to go off at about 1:15 p.m. in the Central Standard Time when halftime should be for this game, because I have yet to see Oklahoma. Every week they come out, they get these huge leads, and then for some reason they fall asleep at the wheel and teams are able to get back up in the game. So my live betting radar and my second half play will be all over Kansas State in the second quarter and in the second half.
Yeah, of course. They do that every week except for Tulane when they're throwing 90-yard bombs.
The minute. Oh, my God. It's so
nice. Yeah. So hopefully, I mean, maybe they listen to the podcast. I'm like, oh, we got to take our foot off the gas the second half. Yeah, good point. I have no interest in Kansas State, though. West Virginia Baylor, I said you'd be covering that on the CW9. TCU, I've been waiting to get to this. I'm trying to avoid it. TCU, they might be up to 40 now. I'm not sure. I did see 39 early in the day. This game's on primetime on Fox, and people are making a big deal of it. And all Fox is saying is, dude, there's USC, Notre Dame, Penn State, Michigan. No one's going to be watching us. Let's just throw Kansas on there. Who cares? But Kansas gets a primetime game. for the first time since, you know, they were ranked in like 07, 08. And they're playing TCU, and you're going to give me tons of recent stats as to why I need to put my money on the horrific Jayhawks again, correct?
No, I did a deep dive on every single advanced statistic, and I could not find a Kansas advantage anywhere. They're so bad. They are so close to ranking 130th in every single category that is college football. I can't give you a reason why to take this team. All I know is they cover and almost upset TCU every year. So, you know, let's wait for it to get to the key number of what, 42? I'll wait till 42, and then I'll fire and I'll tweet over a picture of my ticket.
Yeah, just to give some context on some of the historical results. Since the last 4 years, TCU has beat Kansas by a combined 21 points. Last year, they won 24-23. They won 23-17 the year before that, and I think 34-31 and 27-17. 1 year, I don't know which year it was. I think it was in 2015. They were 45-point favorites, and they were down. TCU was down 14-0 at the half. They ended up coming back and winning by like under a touchdown. But they were 45-point favorites and down 14-0 at the half. So there's just some weird voodoo fuckery that goes on with this matchup.
There's like some booster handshaking going on between the two programs. I don't know what the hell goes on with this series.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that you just blindly say, oh, I don't know, but I'll ride it until it dies. Yeah, so hopefully that thing keeps going because you need all the points you can get with Kansas. Washington State minus 10.5. Do you think that Leach's, they're playing Colorado at home. Do you think Leach's boys respond here and take it out on the Buffs or stay away from here?
I don't think I'm going to have a piece of this game. I think it's the last one of the day, and I'm not sure what book I'll be in Saturday night, but I'll definitely probably want to get some sort of action. The weather scares me here. 45 degrees, 15-mile-an-hour winds, 40% chance of rain. So it's, you know, kind of everything you would expect for a game at Washington State this time of year. I will say that for the stadium there in Pullman, this is not a crosswind. It's not a 15-mile-an-hour crosswind. So passes, you know, still should be caught. It all blows in one direction. So it shouldn't affect kickers and passing long passes, deep passes to wide receivers as much as you would think. But still, 45 degrees and 40% chance of rain, you know, this could be a lower scoring game than you probably would expect.
In the Palouse, and I mentioned earlier, USC Notre Dame, we will cover in the CW9. Last top 25 matchup that I have here is Penn State and Michigan. We mentioned this on the podcast earlier in the week briefly. Michigan beat Penn State last year 49-10. I believe this number is still hanging right around 9.5, 10. Penn State at home in Happy Valley. I was shocked. That took a horrifying number. I took under 42. That thing jumped up the other day to 45. I think Rashawn Gary, one of Michigan's best defenders, is questionable. I still don't see it. Maybe it'll come back down. I don't care. I mean, this happened with LSU. Florida over under jumped 4 points. I mean, it, you know, came in way under, so I don't really care. I would have preferred to have the better number, but what do you see in this matchup?
When I saw that number pop up too, I said, oh shit, what if Penn State wins 45-0? So what I see in this is, you know, Franklin doesn't forget, and what Michigan did last year, I'm sure that's right at the forefront of his thoughts. You know, everybody's ranting and raving about Michigan's defense. They're number two in efficiency in the nation. You know, they're kind of average on limiting explosive plays. But if you do a real deep dive into Michigan, their defensive rushing, here we go again, ISO PPP plus, which is explosive plays, they're actually 79th in the country. And that is, and they're going up against Barkley. I mean, they're going up against the Heisman candidate. They're going up against one of the best rushers, explosive rushers and efficient rushers in the nation. So, you know, they allow big plays on the ground. They're able to, you know, contain it for a while, but sometime during a 9-play drive, somebody's going to bust one. And Barkley, I think this game gets out of hand, really. I mean, it may be 14, 21 points at half, but I think at some point it gets out of hand. And if Franklin has a chance to blow these guys out, he will because of what happened last year.
Yeah, it's a good point. I just still don't see it going over 42, even if it does get out of hand. Because I think Michigan, I mean, I guess if it does early, then Michigan will be forced to throw. That's the worst case scenario for the under. Because I think Harbaugh, You know, if he has a brain, which he does, he knows that they can't keep up. So they're going to have to come in heavy dose, run, try to run the clock, control possession, keep the ball out of Penn State's hands and shorten that game. So, yeah, if it gets out of hand quick, that'll be bad for the under. Are you going to be playing Penn State, do you think?
I am. They're a prime candidate for CW9. They're on the short list.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks for running down the top 25 matchups this week. Not a great week. You know, sort of a lull in the schedule, but there's some hidden gems in there, and we'll find some hidden gems from a betting perspective as well. So, you know, keep mentioning the CW9 and the six pack on Saturday. Make sure you keep your eyes out for both. So the final segment, three and out. On first down, I have to go here. A funnier favorite. I need you to tell me which one's funnier to you. BYU, who is yet to cover. BYU is 0-7 against the spread in the first half, 0-7 against the spread for the game. They're actually road favorites, and they're road favorites at East Carolina. They're laying 5.5 at East Carolina. And then you have UMass, they're 0-6 on the year. They're 7-point favorites at home against Georgia Southern. So two questions for you. Which one's funnier? And then if your life was on the line, if you had to, you know, put your life on the line for one of these teams, money line, which one are you taking?
So I brushed off my addition skills, and I noticed that UMass scored 50 points in their last game against Ohio, and it took BYU their past six games to score just a little bit over 50. So the answer is UMass for my life.
Okay, and UMass off a bye too, right?
Yep.
And at home. I mean, I was shocked when I saw both these teams favorite. Do you like any side in these games?
How are you a favorite over anybody when it's taken you six games to score 50 points? That's insane.
Well, when you play East Carolina, that's the answer. Are you going to take East Carolina?
No, God, no.
Okay, yeah, you can't bet either of these games. But those are some two of the funniest favorites you'll see in 1 week. And BYU, I believe, is the only team in the country who hasn't covered. Number of teams who still are undefeated against the spread, your Fresno, Utah, Georgia Tech, Central Florida, Buffalo. So interesting to see who can keep that run going. One of the questions that we got on second down here, I'll go to one of the questions that I got on Twitter. Appreciate everyone that sends them in, and I'll make sure that you get gear if we use any of yours or a derivation of any. At BMF1314, Brent, so he asked, what are your thoughts on late line movement in college football? You know, you'll see a lot of this in, you know, a lot of sports, in particular college football. You know, it's something that I'll look at, but it doesn't sway anything that I do. You don't know the source of it, and you'll drive yourself crazy if you're trying to chase it. You'll go until, and, you know, if you don't know the source or the reasoning for it, I ignore it. You know, I try to have good reasoning for the bets that I put in, try and get the best number by anticipating what I think, you know, some public moves might be, or if I think, you know, this is going to be a sharper side, let me get it earlier. I try to get the best number. But once I'm locked in, if I see a late move, you know, well, it sucks, I didn't get the best number, but I'm not going to chase it, especially not knowing the source. So, you know, it's interesting to me sometimes to watch, but it doesn't really sway any of my decisions. Do you have any commentary here?
Yeah, I remember when I first started out handicapping, I would notice a lot of people's system was just to chase steam. So 10 minutes before anything would tip or kick, you know, they would say, well, this is what I'm going to do. And you don't know, like you said, you don't know the source of that. You don't know the liability that the book has on one side. You don't know if it's a respected bettor that's coming in and laying in on a number that finally got to where he wanted. You don't know if it's a respected group that's coming in and covering up their tracks from a bet that they made at a lower limit on Tuesday. So chasing steam is just, you'll never figure out the end of it. You're in a never-ending maze. You'll drive yourself crazy. The best thing to do to be a smarter and wiser capper is to create your own power ratings, do your own research, take a stance on a game. And if you miss a number, it's okay not to play it, but maybe you want to think about getting it live in case that number happens to pop up again.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And my like 5-minute speech to anyone who's, you know, thinking about betting on sports or, you know, has lost money in the past. If I had my, you know, little sister or a chimpanzee make my picks for a year, and I just told them to flip a coin, you know, I wouldn't get hurt. I would just juice out, right? That would, you know, you're probably over the long run going to hit right around 50%. You're going to lose the vig, and you know, but you're not never going to get hurt. But why do so many people get hurt betting? Most of it is the, you know, behavioral finance, psychological biases, your cognitive biases, your emotional biases. The, you know, so if you're trying to chase steam and then you lose money and then you're going to say, oh, why did I do that? And then you get off tilt and you're just wet. You're never going to be in a good state of mind trying to do this, and you'll drive yourself crazy and you'll most likely end up getting hurt over time and be betting way too much. You know, with no real good reasoning, and that'll throw your mindset off. So, you know, it's interesting to watch. So I do watch it, but don't let it impact any of your betting if you don't know the source. So, yeah, I think we both agree on that topic. So for on third down here, before we sign off, let's get into our weekly Moneyline underdog parlay. I said last week that it was going to be the week that we hit. I meant that this week, like next week is this week, but I just was kind of got, you know, the translation didn't really work out. So I know who I'm going with this week. So I'll start. I'm going back to the Huskies. I'm going UConn +200 at home against Tulsa. I think Tulsa's not really going to be up for this game, number one, but I think UConn will be able to move the ball. And I think there's a lot of value here. And I'll be on them +6, and I'm going to be throwing them. I'm trying to wait to see if we can get a 7. Doubt it happens, but that's who I'm throwing in here. Who are you going with?
I'm going to go with it was between Baylor and Tulane. I'm going to go with Tulane for reasons that I stated before. I think that their rushing attack is going to catch USF completely off guard. I think this is going to be one of the upsets people are going to be shocked to see, but it won't shock me. And the good news is I'm not fading Appalachian State, which I've been trying to do every week, but they seem to pull it together in the fourth quarter every week. So we're going to go with Tulane at a better than +300 odds.
Yeah, I think they're +360, so UConn's +200. So that'll pay around 13-ish to 1 for our Moneyline underdog parlay. App State this week, I think they got Coastal Carolina. Injury report, there's 3 Coastal Carolina quarterbacks listed as questionable or out. I don't know who's playing quarterback for them. So App State will probably win again. And one thing that I will add is that we already are invested in West Virginia to lose with Baylor for that season win total. So we'll be interested in that money line regardless. But there's your underdog money line parlay of the week. UConn and who did you just say? I just forgot already.
Tulane.
The Green Wave and the Huskies pays out around 13 to 1. So thanks for your time as always, Colin. Look out for the CW9 on Friday, 6-pack Saturday, Sunday morning coffee on Sunday. You can follow all of our action on the Sports Action app. A lot of great content going out there as well. Track your bets, follow your scores, and many more features coming to the app shortly. So thanks for listening, and hopefully we can have another profitable weekend. Cheers. Some Seagram's gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this time.